Hiya, welcome to the Marketing Meetup podcast. I'm Joe. Thank you very, very much for listening. Today we have Ellie Norman, who is the Chief Communications Officer at Manchester United, as well as being the former Director of Marketing and Communications at Formula One. A truly incredible, accomplished human being who is thoughtful, considerate, kind, and just generally very, very lovely with her answers, but also accomplished, intelligent, and just an absolutely fascinating listen to hear how her brain works and how she approaches leadership. And that's what today's session is all about. It's about leadership, no matter what your job title is. So whether you are a person starting your career or someone in a CMO or CEO position presently, whatever your situation, there will be something you can take away today from Ellie's leadership. Before we get going with today's session, I just want to say a big thank you to this week's featured sponsor, who are Redgate Software. Now, Redgate Software are a lovely, lovely software company based in Cambridge. They have a fabulous culture and are on a real growth journey right now. Redgate are always looking to hire marketers, although they have previously just filled two of their biggest roles. And so what I would encourage you to do is, if you're on the lookout for a job right now with a company that are really quite fabulous, take the opportunity to head to their website and head to their talent pool. That means that when the job comes up, then you'll be in the mix for finding out the opportunity and whether you'll be a good fit. I can heavily recommend them, having worked in their office buildings a long, long time ago. With all this said, now's the time to pass over to Ellie and I for a session all about how to be a leader, even if it isn't your job title, with some very thoughtful, considered responses from the brilliant Ellie Normal. Enjoy. You're just wonderful. So thank you for being a fabulous human being. But could we get started with a potted history of your career, just so everyone has some context as to you and where you're from?
Of course we can. But Joe, firstly, the thanks is all mine. It's a real sort of honour and a privilege to be joining you and your community today for this conversation. So thank you for all of your time, and looking forward to the questions. My potted career history, I'm going to have to take you back a few years because I'm now sort of approaching mid-40s. But that started for me when I actually left school at 18. So I did my A-levels. Definitely not the most academic person in the world, Joe, but a real thirst for sort of learning, curiosity, and being with people. So I left school at 18 and I got my first kind of job. And that was actually the title was a marketing assistant, but actually it was like, just do whatever was needed for a very, very small startup company, which was actually a whitening toothpaste. So in the sort of FMCG sector. Now, I did loved going to sort of work and having that sort of routine and just this kind of thirst for what can I learn, and shadowing the sort of people in the organization. But in truth, I didn't do that for that long. So that sort of lasted most probably about sort of 18 months before I was actually at a party with a then boyfriend and met some family friends of his who happened to have a design agency in Brighton. And so from meeting at the party, I got a call to go for a sort of an interview, and I actually left Janina, which was the toothpaste company, and jumped into Blue Hawk Design. And that for me was the start of really actually loving the structure that sort of agencies had, and starting to learn much more the sort of disciplines, appreciate it's right at the end of kind of marketing in that sort of promotion space, but love that sort of discipline. And from there, I then moved to another agency, actually, where I spent 5 years. And this, for me, was a bigger agency, part of a network, Japanese network. And it was where I was able to combine a love for cars With again just continuing to kind of really learn and start to do sort of courses and with the IPA as to sort of what is all of this advertising stuff. And I really kind of valued during that time understanding the sort of disciplines, the power of great briefs, the importance of kind of relationships, particularly between understanding your clients and their problems, but also how to get the best out of your creatives inside an agency. From there, Joe, I think, as you all know, I was really lucky in the sense of my day-to-day client left from Honda, and the chief marketing officer asked the agency whether I would second for them for 6 months until they sort of found a replacement. Lucky for me, that replacement ended up being me, and I spent just shy of 8 years in Honda. And this was an environment I loved. The ability to open my horizon and to really understand everything that kind of comes before you get into the promotional element of marketing, I was able to learn, as well as just genuinely understanding much more about how does a business operate. So things like supply chain, manufacturing, understanding from the sort of Japanese R&D team. I mean, I just like loved it. From there, so I was at Honda from 2005 until 2012, and I got a telephone call to say there was a role at Virgin Media, and it was suggested that I apply for it because it was felt I'd be a sort of good fit. And I think part of my sort of mindset, Joe, is always to think, well, honestly, what's the worst that could happen? And to really think about the sort of positives of reframing. So I could have thought, oh no, I'm not going to do that because it's a sector I don't know. But instead, I thought, well, I've learned so much here at Honda, incredibly kind of grateful. Do you know what? I've never worked in a single country market because I was in a pan-regional role across kind of Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Russia. And actually, I don't know the sector, so I get to learn a new sector. And I don't fully appreciate all of the commercial drivers when you're in a single market. So I jumped across to Virgin Media. Again, loved it. I describe it. I describe Honda often as my kind of the creative craft and the rapport sort of chapter. And for me, my Virgin Media chapter was all around commercial. And so this is where I was really able to understand all of the commercial levers, acquisition, churn, profitability, media mix modeling, and sort of the econometrics, and really do that sort of media planning. And so that was a really wonderful sort of 5 years. And again, a privilege to be able to kind of work across all the different sponsorship properties from V Festival, so music. We had EGX for gaming. We had Usain Bolt, which is, you know, like who doesn't want to learn from the fastest man on the planet, right the way through to at the time sponsoring Southampton Football Club. So like really, really cool stuff. And then I had a telephone call from a couple of Americans, and it was essentially, we've just bought Formula One, we've landed in the UK, and we need someone to come and set up marketing and communications, and we've been given your name. Where are you at? And I was like, oh, okay. Well, this would be good because I love cars, love speed. And I think for certainly for them, you know, I was fortunate because when I was at Honda all those years ago, I worked with a phenomenal creative agency called Wieden and Kennedy. And we had a really good relationship. And I think, you know, testament to that, Wieden and Kennedy gave my name to Formula One, and so my boss who recruited me at Formula One is an incredible leader, a guy called Sean Bratches, and when he came to the UK from New York, he had worked with Wieden and Kennedy New York office when he was running sort of ESPN, and so he visited the London office and was given my name. So I had a really brilliant cup of coffee with him, and was very excited. And similarly, I thought, right, what's the worst that can happen? I've never built a team from scratch, and let's just give it a crack. And so, with that, I thought, well, I can bring some knowledge of automotive and cars. And I can bring some knowledge and understanding in terms of how a media and entertainment sort of business works and the landscape and subscription, which is, what Virgin Media was. And I love solving like problems. And so that took me to Formula One and 5 incredible years there, revitalizing the sport, rebranding the sport. And then I left Formula One in April of 2022 and joined Manchester United, where I currently am, in September 2022. And again, thinking about my chapters, I describe now my Formula One chapter as my transformation chapter, because that was a real 5 year period where we, not me by myself, there was a team of us, like genuinely transformed the sport. And so now my chapter in Manchester United, I describe as my reputation and resilience chapter, because we always have a challenge to think about how we're going to respond to most days.
I bet. Well, as a United fan, there's we've kicked off the football chat in the chat here, with Lewis and Paul causing trouble with Up the Blues and You Never Walk Alone. So we're there already. But
All
just
very good clubs. What can I say, Joe?
let's not do this. But the thing I love, and it was picked up in the chat there as you're speaking through your story is, well, there's a few things, but three themes in particular. The first is that you started in that sort of all-encompassing assistant role, which I think Nicole sort of put in the chat there, like will be so familiar to so many of us who started in that sort of marketing job and then sort of found themselves elsewhere or indeed find themselves in that first role. So that was really interesting. The second is I absolutely love how you speak about positivity. And I'd lo love to come back to that a little bit later because that positivity, I think, is from what I've observed from you and how you've spoken before, seems to be a really important trait. And I'd love to pick up a little bit on that later. And then third, just to revel in the gloriousness, that's not a word, but of your
I
chapter
like it.
mindset. Like having chapters like that is such a an interesting way of thinking about things, which is such a thoughtful approach. So I hope there's like three takeaways right there straight away for folks watching in. Reflecting on all of that period, though, going back to the title of today's session, which is sort of leadership, no matter your job title. How do you reflect on your leadership journey, even if you're in that assistant sort of role, and how you've progressed as a leader, in over the course of your sort of 20 years, in marketing?
A really good question. So I'm still on my leadership learning journey, because every day is a school day. I think certainly the older I've got and the more that I've sort of read about it or learned about it, what I fundamentally believe is everyone has the capability to be a leader. And so it does not come with title or hierarchy. And there's actually a really phenomenal course called The Living Leader, which is by Joe, Penny very well, but a lady called Penny Ferguson. which is often sort of life changing for many, many people. And that came to me sort of way later in life than kind of starting out at the age of 18. So that would definitely be a recommendation for sort of people. But aside from sort of that, actually, a lot of what I think about in terms of leadership is I think you can spot leaders throughout sort of organizations. And for me, it's who are those people that are able to galvanize others around them? Who has their ear to the ground, kind of knows what's going on, has a really clear sort of vision and a passion and an articulation, and can take people on a journey sort of with them. And now, as I'm sort of continuing to sort of develop and progress, for me, a lot of what I really want to do as a leader myself is very much to be able to lift my team up and to actually be able to get people to kind of lift their eyes and to really sort of believe and discover that we are all capable of more than we think we are. And I think that stems from certainly the leaders that I've had have seen something in me that perhaps I didn't see in myself at that time and have given me those opportunities.
I love that. And like that feels really important. That last point there about when folks have recognized you even when you've not seen it in yourself. Do you have any stories or examples of that and how it made you feel or the mechanisms that they used or whatever it was? Because that as an opportunity for folks watching in feels like a hell of a takeaway if we could find one.
So if I think back to some of my sort of previous sort of leaders or those people that have perhaps seen something in me and sort of lifted me up, the first is a guy called Ian Norman. We're not blood related, but he ran the agency that I worked for at the very beginning, where Honda was a client. And I think what he gave to me was the opportunity, being like really young and very junior, to be in front of the client because he saw my sort of work ethic and the approach to just this thirst for trying to take my time to listen and to kind of understand as much as I could. And that was such a kind of confidence boost and a lift to think that I was trusted as a sort of young, very junior person, but to be there sort of representing the agency and being sort of in those kind of client conversations. And then when I was in Honda, a Scottish guy called Ken Keir was the president of Honda UK. And this was at a time where, you know, making the in incredible campaign work with Wieden and Kennedy. And it really was, you know, I'm slightly biased, but some of the best sort of back then. And the only question he would ever ask when we were taking campaigns to him was, does it make you feel scared? And that was the most empowering question, particularly with the creative that we were wanting to create for Honda, of really elevating it to a higher human truth and really sort of looking at it, playing the sort of the long game of building the power of dreams. And that was almost, yeah, number one, empowering, but with a sense of like, keep going, don't be fearful, don't hold back. And I really took so much from that. Amazing. And then actually the first female boss I had was at Virgin Media. And that was a lady called Keris Bright, who's now the chief customer officer at BBC. And I mean, Keris is like a doctor, so she is like phenomenally bright. But again, it was the support that I had from carers are putting me into, I say situations, but into like environments where she was constantly stretching me and my abilities and kind of my learning. So I've always had a, I'll say a heavy skew towards brand and creativity, but I didn't really have that commercial muscle. And so she really stretched me and put me into those situations to grow that commercial muscle and to understand the levers and like this is a P&L and this is what we mean by kind of media mix modeling and sort of that. I can honestly take an example from every single kind of chapter of where I feel like I've been given those opportunities by my bosses, my leaders. And I'm so grateful for that, that actually, if I'm to be a good leader, and obviously my team's past and present will be the judge of that. But my sense is I have a responsibility to be lifting up those around me and also to be giving others those opportunities as I've received them.
Love that. Thank you. It's wonderful, and I hope folks can take an awful lot from that, because I think there's so many strong examples of leadership in action there. And as you were speaking, it reminded me of an analogy that I heard only yesterday, actually, which was from someone who was describing their relationship with their child. And they were saying, very much about like how they teach their child to do things, and certainly not comparing marketers to children in any way, but it's a decent analogy nonetheless. And what he said was that if his child goes out with an umbrella and it's raining, then the thing that he will do in that circumstance will be that he won't give them the umbrella. He'll wait for them to sort of learn the lesson. They'll get wet, and then next time they'll go out with an umbrella because they've learned the lesson. They got wet once, so this time take the umbrella. However, if the child is about to step out in front of a bus, then that's the time to sort of grab them and sort of bring them back, and bring them back and sort of look after them, and it's almost that push and pull of leadership. And listening to your answer, you use words like fearlessness and being fearless in your action. But I wondered how you go about that, because I think that release for some leaders is quite difficult to sort of say, I'm going to let you go off and figure things out and do this for yourself. So how do you determine what's an umbrella and what's a bus for the folks that you're working with when you're in a leadership position?
That's a really brilliant question. I think, Joe, reflecting, think I've mostly carried a little bit of that from being a kid and actually being quite comfortable being unconventional. So I'm really happy to go down kind of different paths or not follow the kind of normal path. And so where I am now, when I think about your sort of umbrella question versus bus question, I will tend to actually ask a lot of questions. And time is always a factor and the context is always a factor. But I'd rather start with asking questions and almost take a genuine coaching approach on the umbrella side. And then be really, really clear, when are we in a bus moment? And so for me, when you're in a genuine crisis, that does call for a bus more often than not. And that's how I try to sort of determine things. And sometimes you just don't have the time, although there's a genuine crisis, and then I can be sort of very instructional because we need absolute clarity and this is what we're doing, bam, bam, bam. But actually, I did a over the last sort of year, actually, I've done a coaching qualification. And that the power of a the power of a good question is so important. And actually, as human beings, inevitably, we've all got the answers inside ourselves, but we just need someone to ask the right question. And so, as I continue to sort of develop, I'm very conscious with myself to say, well, what language am I using? Can I use a question? When should I offer an observation? And to think about it like that. Now, I'm far from perfect and haven't mastered it, but I have the intent, and that's what I'm sort of practicing sort of each day from having done the sort of qualification.
I love that. Thank you. There are two questions that come to mind, and it's a terrible interview practice to ask two questions at once. But I'm going to do it, and feel free to forget one if need be. So the first on that questions is like, do you have any specific phrasing of questions that you tend to gravitate to when you're in these scenarios? And then sorry for the terrible practice, but like on the flip side, have you any examples of when either you or someone who in the hierarchy is beneath you has kind of managed up and sort of used these same techniques on you and sort of, because one of your points earlier was about everyone can be a leader position, and stuff like that. So I'd love to know that sort of upward sort of leadership position too.
So I think the first, and keep me honest here, Joe, in case I forget part
I
two,
will.
because I like everything super simple. But part one, sort of questions or phrases. In fact, you know what? This comes from Wieden and Kennedy. So in their London office, I don't know if it's still there, but the first thing that you would see when you walked in was almost like a mannequin, okay? And it was a, I'm going to say a guy dressed in like a really wide pinstripe suit, like proper old school bowler hat and a briefcase. But he was holding a sign that said "Walking stupid every day." And actually, that is something I carry with me every day, which is I have enough knowledge and awareness to know that I don't know everything. And therefore, actually, a lot of my start position will be to listen and to observe. And, particularly in meetings, you will often be with people who have a really strong point of view or a perspective on things. And so, when there's conflict, and I love bringing harmony, right, and getting to this win-win and collaborating and the sort of rapport. And so, actually, for me, it's very much like, oh, okay, that's interesting. What have I missed? Help me understand your point of view better. So it will almost be that of trying to literally extract more and more so that we can understand, well, is that a fact? Is that a feeling? Or is that fiction? And that for me is like, no, let's just spend time together. Because so often you can start, and we've all experienced it, you can start from like a place that is so far apart, but actually we can bring everything together. So yes, it requires people knowing what the non-negotiables are, what are the areas to kind of compromise, but you can do that through sort of conversation. So for me, it's, I might be on, say, paper, the most senior person in the room, but it doesn't mean I have the right answer. But collectively, we can get to the right answer. So again, it'll be like, okay, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that. What have I missed? Help me understand that more. So I try to think more about the kind of what's and the how's, whereas and less about the kind of why, which can maybe feel sometimes more accusationary. And that was part one of your question, wasn't it, Joe?
That was
Okay.
perfect there. And then so part
What was
two
part two?
was about folks managing up or leading up to you. So even if they're not hierarchically up there, being a leader nonetheless.
So, do you know what I really love is I love it when the team will come to me with, Ellie, here's a heads up. because I love a heads up. The worst thing is like surprises. But like heads up, I know this has happened or this is happening. And they've spent the time doing the kind of critical thinking. And it'd be like, okay, so this is the situation. This is where we're at. These are the options. And I'd like to recommend this. Can we have a conversation about it? That for me is a brilliant demonstration of kind of managing up, because I'm seeing that development in those individuals versus, you know, sometimes people be like, oh my goodness, something's happened, and they come to you with a problem. And I'm like, okay, but what's the solution? Mm-hmm. Now, it might be that you don't know what it is, but this is how I've kind of thought about it. And can we talk about it? This is what I think we should do. But are you on board with that? And what have I missed? And to then talk about it like that.
Nice. I love that.
And that for me is like brilliant.
It sounds unbelievable. You know, it's I can imagine we've got Nicole in the chat saying, bring solutions, not problems. We've got Kerry with a full on, oh my God, massive fan of the heads up too. we've got Christine saying one problem, three possible solutions. It goes on. So you've got a lot of people agreeing with you here. I want to take it to a slightly different perspective. Folks, I can see, by the way, that there's 24 open questions, so we will absolutely get to these. And so with that, the only thing I could request is that you give a thumbs up to the question that you'd like prioritized in the Q&A, and we'll make sure in the last sort of 20 minutes or so that we get to those questions. So if there's any in the Q&A that you like, make sure to give them a thumbs up and we'll do that. One thing I wanted to ask you, though, because I'm placing myself in your shoes. Well, I'm placing myself in your situation here, which is that you described your career as a series of really amazing progressions, but you've ended up in a place with undoubtedly a degree of status or job title that people will put on some sort of pedestal, whether possibly you like it or not. Have you ever had like the imposter syndrome sort of kick in? And if you have, like, how do you deal with that personally? Because I've noted like themes about positivity and resilience and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah, I am a very positive and optimistic person and have a sort of a high degree of resilience. I do have imposter syndrome. And that for me stems back to that decision to not go to university. And so for me, that's, you know, the voice in my head will often be like, oh, am I going to get found out? Should I be here? Oh, I'm not qualified to do this. And again, the positive side of that is actually it keeps me really curious, because I've always got this voice which is never to be complacent. And therefore, what is it that I can learn, or what else should I be sort of doing? So, you know, whether it's some of the Mark Ritson courses or, you know, the marketing sort of leadership masterclass with Sil Saler and like Thomas Barter, or the sort of coaching qualification I did last year with Wisdom 8, so it's part of the Association for Coaching. Now I'm playing Joe with AI, because I certainly don't know enough about it, but it's here for sort of all of us. And, you know, if I'm going to encourage my team to bring the outside in and we talk about what's inspiring us or giving us kind of energy, it's as much on me to be playing with stuff or sharing with my team something that I found inspiring or kind of motivating. It could be a podcast, it could be something I've seen on TikTok or kind of YouTube, right the way through to, you know, just I love being out walking and just seeing something that's caught my eye, taking a photo and kind of sharing it. So I think that's a positive side of my imposter syndrome.
I love that. It's fuel, you know, it really feels like fuel for action, which is a really admirable thing. And it, you know, I kind of reflect on the past few weeks of talks because we've had Sir John Hegarty. We then had
Ledge.
Yeah, absolute legend. We then had Joe Lane, who was formerly the CMO of Tony Schiaccoloni, and now we've had yourself.
Favorite chocolate.
Yeah, it's going well. It's going absolutely well. But like the thing about all three, and I'm counting yourself in this, is this positive mindset. And as someone who has at times allowed sort of negativity to seep into my life one way or another, I just find this really refreshing. And so I just wanted to highlight that as a point, because like I think that's just absolutely wonderful. Like I feel really, really quite something about, you know, people being drawn to positivity and sort of embodying it. So I just want to say thank you for making
and
that
also
point.
Joe, like you do an incredible job for your community and the generosity and the kindness that you bring. And you will be kind of worrying, I'm sure, about whether you're doing enough or what else you could be doing. And I have the same sort of worries of, you know, what am I doing in my job? But when I think about coming out of my bubble, so my bubble is, you know, a marketing community. But, you know, when we think about the world or the country, and people doing phenomenal jobs. I had an amazing conversation with a doctor yesterday. Her first name is Emma, PhD, and is essentially looking at the impact of climate change on health. And that's a conversation where I'm like, oh my goodness, I feel like the smallest kind of person on the planet. Because there are so many incredible people with real smarts that are wanting to really make a difference and to kind of benefit society. And so that's what I always kind of think about, of back to like, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
You know, I want to do a really good job, but I work in marketing and comms. I'm not saving lives. As important as I think my job is.
Yeah. There is a pragmatism which I adore. That's lovely. As Nicole has put in the chat, we say at work it's PR not ER, and so there'll be versions of that.
So true.
People will be very bored of me speaking about my shoulders relaxing on these webinars by this point, but my shoulders will relax now, so thank you. Let's take some questions from the community, because there are a bunch, and we always want to make sure that
I'm just going to go like that, because I saw a question saying, I wonder what's on the picture behind me. It is I'm going to say a ram because of the horns. I'm in a WeWork space.
You're just not massive into your farm animals, you know.
You say that, Joe. I am a farmer's daughter, so I did grow up on a farm, so I'm pretty good with farm animals. Lambing season, calving, you name it, I've done it.
It's a wonderful time of the year.
It's my favorite.
I love that. Kerry says, is there nothing this woman can't do? So
plenty.
let's take this question from Simon. So Simon himself is a wonderful, wonderful human being. And Simon says, I'm wondering how you manage a marketing function that has so many moving parts, owners, players doing strange things, media gunning for you, trying to make a news story out of nothing. How do you manage all of this stuff?
Not perfectly all of the time, but what I would say is you need to be really great at knowing what the noise is and not becoming distracted by the noise. And so Manchester United is a really big club. We've got lots of talented people inside the organisation. And so my sort of team works across brand and creative, content, communications and fan engagement. And then in my colleagues' team, they have the sort of consumer kind of marketing. And sort of really driving the sort of acquisition and sort of churn sort of prevention or reduction and stuff. And so number one for me, it's being really aware of the system of which you're kind of operating in. And you're right, Joe, all of those things, the league table doesn't lie. So that has a sort of huge influence. You have players, stakeholders, which could be from owners to the rest of the sort of exec leadership team that I'm on, in sort of teams, fans, as like the most important stakeholder, commercial partners. I mean, it's a multitude of complexity. And that, for me, it always comes back to what are we doing? Why are we doing it? Who are we talking to? So it's really sort of understanding the noisy landscape, but turning off that distraction and coming back to the really important questions of who are we talking to? What do we want them to think, feel, and do? And then what are we going to go and do, and how are we going to sort of measure it or see whether it's kind of working or not, and then pivot or kind of evolve from there. I mean, it's easier said than done, but it is trying to keep that frame of reference, because otherwise I think you would just not have any focus, because you would literally be pulled to pillar to post. Now, in truth, we do get pulled from pillar to post a lot, but it is always trying to kind of come back to say, what's our priority? Or do you know what? If there is a new priority, that's fine, but what are we going to stop? Because we've got a finite amount of people, finite amount of kind of resource.
It's a clarity thing, you know, that clarity of mission and direction. As you say, it strikes me that that is harder said than done. I think I heard you say that you got 1.1 billion fans across, you know, across your various channels. So you got a lot of voices. So it must that must be a muscle that is almost incomparable to almost any other situation that you would find yourself in as a marketer. If I could follow up on that one specific aspect and sort of speak to drowning out the noise and sort of focusing, like, have you, is that just a muscle memory thing that you've had to build up over the course of time? Or have you got any sort of like techniques or anything like that for finding that clarity? And the reason I ask is that, like, of the leaders I've spoken to recently, all of them seem to have that in common, you know, that sort of clarity of customer, clarity of message, or whatever it may be. And so they don't spend a lot of time worrying about the other things. And that feels like a really enviable trait, if not one that should be celebrated. So I'd love to know your approach to that, if it's just not intuitive, which it may well be.
I think, part of the way I think about things is just trying to simplify everything. And for me, that simplicity comes with having clarity about what are we doing, what are we not doing. And also, again, just really laddering it up into sort of highest point, because, inevitably in teams and in all organizations, people will have specific projects that they're working on. And therefore, for them, that project is the number one priority. But for me, the importance of communicating across your function or across the organization, so no, let's ladder this all up, because that might be your number one priority. And it doesn't mean it's not important, but you know what? For the entire business, that might not actually be in the top five. It's going to contribute or it could enable. But I think my job is to be really clear on, well, no, what are those things for the business? And what's that mean for us? And then how does that get sort of communicated through the team? And how do we help the team to sort of understand what should be a priority or not? Or if actually a load of requests come in, it's like, well, where's that conversation that we can then have with the other team or function that says, right, we've got all of these requests. What would you like? What do you like first?
Nice.
And just sort of talking to that And things do change, and sometimes things happen, and you have to stop and then react to that. And we've had a few of those things as well, Joe. But I think it's maintaining a level of flexibility and agility, but always coming back really regularly to say, right, where are we on these? I know five things, where are we on these 10 things, whatever it might be. So, with the time that you have in the day, are you using that to do one of these five things, one of these 10 things?
I love that. And I don't know whether you do this on purpose, but what was really interesting as you gave that answer is that everything you discussed was framed as a question as well, which sort of comes back down to what we were speaking about earlier with that leadership thing. And like maybe it's second nature by now, but I just thought that was a really interesting way to answer the question to sort of pick up on everything that we've sort of
I
spoken
appreciate that
about.
observation.
So it's it's one of those things you can't help but notice it, but when you see it, it's amazing to sort of see in action. Let's take the next question that comes from an anonymous person. So Zoe is fessing up in the chat. So Zoe's asking for recommendations of podcasts, books, courses for those looking to demonstrate they're ready for the next level in marketing leadership. And if I was to summarize those we've already spoken about, we've got The Living Leader by Penny Ferguson. We've got Wisdom 8 by a lady called Catherine and Gareth.
Topa. Yep. And Gareth Hussey, yes.
And then over to you after that, because those were the two that, Thomas Barter's Marketing Leader
Yep.
Masterminds.
That's it. Thomas Barter and Sil Salah, the Marketing Leadership Masterclass. As a big fan of Mark Ritson's courses, a chap I love listening to podcasts, and is Scott Galloway. And he has an organization called Section 4 that does sort of a lot of almost like sprints that you can kind of sign up to. Really, really good. And I'm a big fan of a number of podcasts. So John Evans, the uncensored CMO, regular kind of listener to him. Abby Dixon as well. She's got an awesome podcast. So I try to always have a sort of a blend of those things going on, Joe, to be honest with you. And people like CIM, IPA, they do really sort of fantastic sort of courses. So I don't think we've got any shortage of sort of tools, and it can either be paid tools or actually I think there is so much brilliant free content that you can learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. There is certainly no
Like
shortage.
this, Joe, like everything that you do and the generosity to your community, this is all learning and development. So actually I think the more that you put into communities, the more that you can sort of learn for yourself. So this would be sort of great. I'm a non-exec director of the Marketing Society as well. So again, that is another organization that I've got a real soft spot for in terms of what they sort of provide and, again, the leadership, the conversations, the community. And of course, Sherilyn, the Marketing Academy. Just there's a lot.
There's a lot. There is a lot, but I think what that speaks to is your dedication, 'cause like there is a lot, but if you keep on those, then you're doing well. I tell you what, Ellie, the chat feature has just gone mad with Zafira. People are speaking about Vauxhall Zafiras, so like I know what's going on. So I'm blaming Mel here. I think folks have picked up on your Honda and MOT's background, your Honda and F1 background, which is fabulous. Right, let's take the next one from Sarah or Sarah, who asks any advice on how to prove the value of marketing in an organization where there is much skepticism above and beyond a supportive role of it being a coloring in department, and how to influence other leaders who are equally skeptical.
A lot of hard work and persistence, for sure. Do you know, for me, it's again spending time perhaps with who are some of those biggest critics. And it's easy, you know, it's easy to often say, you know, the CFO doesn't get it, I can't get my budget. But again, sitting with the CFO and understanding the language of the business, how the commercials work, again, asking questions, what do you think kind of marketing is, or what would be the top three things that we could kind of do to support the commercial growth? And just try to sort of actually kind of learn, say, well, where is their start point? Because what you think might be necessary might not be on their radar, but actually there might be some other things that you were like, okay, we could easily do that. I don't really think that's marketing. We should just kind of do that. But if you start there, how do you build that confidence and your that trust in yourself and your team's capabilities, and then just build from there with some small sort of examples? So I think that's kind of really practical. All for me, and again, this is a something sort of I took away from the Thomas Barter Sil Sala sort of leadership masterclass, was you will have your business objectives on one circle and you'll have your sort of customer on the other circle, and it's like really understand what customer needs are. Those two things that kind of cross over is what you really want to focus on as a business and to kind of really grow and to stretch that. So actually, what is that in your organization, and what's the role that you can play at marketing to make that stretch as much as possible? And that comes back to being the voice of the customer, really understanding the research. What is it that you're telling? What is it that that research is telling you? Who is it that you're talking to? And just having that sort of conviction and sort of understanding what you bring to the table as that different voice, which is additive, but with the same objective, which is fundamentally, how do we grow revenues and improve profitability in most kind of cases? That for me is like always a place to sort of start and to try to build up that level of trust and respect.
Yeah, there was a quote from I always come back to it from Martin George, who was the customer director over at Waitrose before we had maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and he sort of said finance is the language of business. And so, you know, I love how you highlighted there those little wins and sort of demonstrating that value, but then also that commercial awareness and sort of speaking in that. I know you spoke to that earlier in the session as well, that I think it was during your Honda time where you were saying that you learned that language. I maybe want to follow up on that quickly because it does feel like a really important point. Picking up the skills of commercial language, because you're working in very commercial organizations, I suppose, like how did you go about doing that? Because it seemed to be a skill that you said didn't come naturally to you. I may have misinterpreted that
Yeah,
bit.
no, that's a fair and true interpretation. Spending time with people who do that. And so I do want to sit with the CFO or my finance business partner and be like, okay, talk me through this. Help me understand, or, you know, where do we make our revenue? What's important? How does it kind of work? So that I can have a base level kind of understanding of it all. And then, you know, if you work with agencies are fantastic partners, and sort of resources for training and upskilling as well. And inevitably, you know, your media agencies will be really sort of proficient in sort of econometrics or media mix modeling. So again, just trying to sort of just understand and learn more. And then there are again, countless podcasts or kind of videos on YouTube, like Peter Field and Les Brunet, in terms of just really understanding the sort of the long and the short of it in terms of the marketing kind of ROI. So they are all the types of places that I sort of go to. So, right, do I understand the theory? Who can I work with? Who can help me to put that into practice? How can I make that relevant to my business? Okay, the CFO. I mean, the CFOs, they see everything across an organization. So just go and make friends.
I love that. Go and make friends. Wonderful. I love that. Ellie, I'm mindful that like we're coming to the end and you've got a big, big important job to do. There are so many wonderful questions, particularly around career progression, coming up in the chat. So even if we can't take it to you, then we've got the message loud and clear as well, this side of things, that we'll make sure to curate some stuff in for TMM at some point so we can investigate that in greater detail. But you've been an absolute legend. Thank you so much for taking the time. The clarity, the takeaways, the spirit in which you've sort of embodied today has been absolutely fabulous and so inspiring as well. So thank you for doing that. And
well,
also,
thank you.
Not at all. And thank you to everyone in the community as well. Like, you're just the absolute best. Where the chat feature went today, I'm blaming Mel and I'm blaming Lewis. That's on you too. But the rest of you, including Mel and Lewis, actually, have been absolutely fabulous. A big, big thank you to Frontify, Exclaimer, Cambridge Marketing College, and Redgate for sponsoring today's session. Without them, then we wouldn't be able to bring these sessions to you. So do check them out in the follow-up email. We've got the last session of this mini season next week with David McQueen, who's speaking about how to operate with more courage and less fear. So that should be a fabulous one.
He's brilliant. Yeah,
he's wicked. Thank you. That's an endorsement that will go a long way. And with all that said, thank you, Ellie. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. It's been a real pleasure, and we'll see you again next week. Take care.
Happy Tuesday afternoon, and thank you for everyone's time. Really grateful.
Love it. Take care, everyone.
Take care. Bye.